Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on a Food Friday, December 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Chef Rick Orlando. Rick is a chef, entrepreneur, writer, leader of culinary tours to Italy. Today, we'd like to talk about favorite holiday meals and recipes. Maybe there's that one meal in your memory, maybe when you were a kid, that you just never forgot. Let's talk about some of your favorite meals, your favorite holiday recipes. Chef Rick will share some of his own. I'm only in it for the onion dip and crackers for the most part. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Chef Rick Orlando, it's holiday time. We'll be back. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on Food Friday, we welcome back Chef Rick Orlando, the owner of the Richter Scale brand, makers of Rick Orlando's best line of hot sauce, barbecue sauce, and custom spice rubs, including the thing that I could drink from the bottle, Purple Haze Psychedelic Hot Sauce. He is a chef instructor for Capital Region and Kingston Area Not-for-Profits. He writes a monthly food column. He hosts monthly pop-up dinners all over the region. He hosts small groups on immersive food, farm, wine, and culture tours of Sicily. Frankly, he exhausts me just when he tells me what he's been up to. The number to call with your favorite food memory or recipe from the holidays, 800-348-2551. We'll get into that as we roll along. 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rick, how are we?
I am well, 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 Ray. How are you?
Well, you've recounted some of the things you've been doing, and I'm ready for a nap now. I mean, you really never stop, man. You got to be in your mid-30s by now.
I'm getting there. Yeah, you know, I got a couple of white hairs.
I don't know how you do it. So what's been going on in Rick world?
Well, you know, what was not in that bio, which I should update for you, is I'm also the president of the Good Neighbor Food Pantry
in
Woodstock. And so the food pantry has been very busy through Thanksgiving, hundreds of turkeys. I prepared the meal for, well, prepared the turkeys. We had a lot of help, but prepared the turkeys for the community dinner for 250 people. We gave away 400 turkeys on the Saturday before. The pantry's running 4 days a week. We're applying for grants. And, you know, I'm cooking and doing my thing.
All right, so call my producer, and we'll add that to your... that's me. So just call me whenever you can, and then I'll
resend it.
You know, you sent it last time, and I forgot. Rick Orlando is our guest today. It's favorite holiday recipes and favorite holiday memories, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So you come from an Italian family, right?
Yeah, Italian-American family. My parents split up when I was in grade school, so my stepmother was Pennsylvania Dutch, so there was really no food.
Wow. Just noodles, egg noodles.
Shake and bake pork chops, tuna casserole with mushroom soup.
Right.
But my mother's second husband was from Puerto Rico, so there was this new influence of food came into my life in my adolescence.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was an interesting mix. As a matter of fact, I brought two dishes for you today.
Oh, yeah?
I brought one of our traditional, I'm from New Haven, okay?
So right.
New Haven was very much Naples, Calabria, Sicily, Southern Italian, highest population of Italian Americans of any city over 100,000 in the country.
I didn't know that. Even in New York City?
Yeah, 30%.
Wow.
I mean, percentage, yeah.
Yeah, incredible.
That may have changed now because they all skedaddle to the suburbs, but I have linguine with crab sauce, which is something that we always had. And then under that, I have like, we call it arroz con marisco, rice with seafood, which is something, a Puerto Rican dish. It's got pigeon peas and scallops and lobster cooked with rice.
The crab sauce is red. I'm surprised.
It is. So those of you in the know, and I'm sure there are some of you in the know out there that grew up either in New York, New Jersey, somewhere near the shore.
Yeah.
You know, the Italian Americans were experiencing affluence by being in America. They were having more access to meat, but they also were still old school foragers.
Right.
So we would go crabbing in the Quinnipiac River, Long Island Sound in the summer, get big buckets of blue crabs, and my mother or grandmother would put on a pot of water, boil them for like just 2 or 3 minutes to kill them, and wrap them up and freeze them and save them for the crab sauce. So this is basically, there's no pieces of crab in it. You take the whole crabs, pan fry them with some onions and garlic, add a little white wine, and then all your tomatoes, canned tomatoes, and a little water, and you let it perk along on the stove for at least 6 hours.
Really?
And what happens is you get this tomato sauce that's so redolent of crab. Now, when I served it at the restaurant, people would say, where's the crab? So I'd put a little crab on top for a garnish. But we would just have the pile of crabs that had been boiled for 6 hours where the meat was almost not even there, but you just kind of sucked on them and got, you know, your little paper cuts burned and everything. But but anyway, it's delicious. I made a batch the other day getting ready for Christmas Eve, and I put it in there because Christmas Eve in the Italian-American family is this Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Do you do the Seven Fishes?
Well, I always have. I've done it at the restaurants. I've done private dinners, and we always did it for the family, and I've got some great stories about that. But this year, my son Willis lives in Italy. My daughter Sid just moved to Seattle, so only one left around is my son Terry, who's a vegetarian.
So
my wife and I are going to do like a little bouillabaisse with seven fishes in it, and then the rest of it we'll just eat, you know.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. That is such a big deal. I've only experienced it once or twice in my life, the Feast of Seven Fishes. It's quite a thing.
It is a thing. I have an article. I posted it on my Facebook and Instagram, and I also have a Substack, rickorlando.substack. I have a whole article about the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Call my producer about that.
Yeah,
we'll put it on the link. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a really intense day, especially as a little kid, because it was kind of creepy smelling. Bacala and crabs and squid and, you know.
Yeah.
But as you grew into it, the things we ate when I was little, of course, we ate the crab sauce because it was delicious, and anything fried, okay? So they would fry, but never the smelts, never the whole fish, but the shrimp and all that, maybe lobster with butter. But it really is a fun time, and it's not an Italian thing. It's an Italian-American thing.
The smelt? The seven fishes is an Italian-American thing.
An Italian thing is to eat fish on Christmas Eve, but not seven fishes. That was, again, part of the growing affluence of the Italian-American community pre-war, post-war. This developed into a feast. And, of course, all the different religious feasts are based on things that really are odd. Why do we have seven? There are seven sacraments. Oh, so am I eating death and baptism?
When I think you and Rocco were on one Christmas, and I did a little research on this.
Yeah.
It's not always seven. There could be 11.
Of course.
You know?
Seven minimum.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, seven minimum. It depends on, you know, and now times have changed because we don't have the fish markets anymore.
Well, you know, there are some.
There are some, but and few, and you know, there's a couple that I really like around here. Well, I won't mention, but they're
right.
But in the old days, there was a fish market every couple of blocks, like in New Haven where I grew up. There were just fish markets, and they were smelly old fish markets. And even when Cousins was still here,
I remember that
people would line up right 3 or 4 days before Christmas Eve. They'd be lined up or a week before getting their bacala, and you know, and of course you got to get your bacala in advance because you have to soak it and rinse it and soak it. Bacala being salt cod. A good aside of that, my friend Sham is from England, and he's from Hull, so he's got like a really thick accent. And he said, oh, we would eat the bacala. My mother had a great way of rinsing it. She would put it in the back of the toilet so that there was six of us. So at least 12 times a day, or maybe 18, maybe 18, that toilet would flush and the water would renew,
you know,
and it would...
Check, please. All right, that's enough.
It's the back, not the front.
Hopefully you didn't do that at the restaurant.
The
you
back,
know what
the
I mean?
Back, the back, the back. The clean spot.
Chef Rick Orlando joins us today. What's your favorite holiday recipe or holiday meal memory? 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Matt from Woodstock wrote in, we had my brother's wedding reception at Rick's New World. Great venue, special event. We still miss the blackened string beans. Every now and then they make an appearance when Rick shows up here. So
you know, no matter how long you've been at it, you got to play the song that sold the most 45s.
Now, has any restaurant said, hey, listen, we want to use this recipe?
Oh, yeah. I've consulted and given people the recipe.
You're doing the consulting now?
A little bit here and there, yeah. Help some people out.
Do you ever see that show? And I only saw it once or twice. A guy comes in, there's a bar that's having a disaster, and the guy comes in and fixes up the bar. And he's
I'm John Tapper.
He's a little brash.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But I mean, we got to get a camera behind you when you do the consultations.
John Tapper, man, that guy, he's shameless.
Is he? Well, I guess I haven't watched it long enough.
I am endorsed by all these products. You know?
The number here is 800-348-2551. And tell you what, Rick, let's grab one call here before we take a break.
Already? We haven't even gotten our hands dirty.
What, you want to eat? Want to eat now?
No, that's okay. Go. Right. Take the call.
All right, so let's go to Michelle in East Greenbush. Michelle, you're on.
Hi, Michelle.
Oh, hi. How are you? Hi there.
Hi.
I've taken a class of yours once, and it was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Do you remember it?
Oh, I do.
Oh, good.
I do. But I also have I just didn't think it was very special, the crab sauce. But when you mentioned it, I was very sentimental about it, about my grandmother. She lived with us, and she made it often on a Sunday.
Ah.
And it was just like you said, the red sauce.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. And it was the whole crab. And my mother and my grandfather, my poppy, and I would sit after dinner for like 2 hours getting all the meat out of the crab.
Exactly. Just making a mess and the bib and the whole routine.
Yes.
You know, it is a funny tradition. Where did you grow up?
Long Island.
Oh, okay.
But they were from Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were Neapolitan, my grandparents.
Yeah, very popular on both sides of the Long Island shore, New Jersey, Connecticut, you know, big thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was great. She'd make, lobster sauce, too, but the crab was the best. So thanks for bringing back that memory.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
In that little article I wrote, I mentioned that the crab sauce is special because it's a dish that you never get in a restaurant.
Why?
Because it takes forever to cook. Live blue crabs are not something that most fishmongers offer very much.
Yeah.
You can buy frozen blue crabs, like in the shell at some of the supermarkets, and they work fine because it's almost like making stock, right? You're going to cook them forever.
Right.
But it's something you almost never see on a restaurant menu.
Now, what about on Christmas Day? Are you a turkey guy?
No. Christmas Day, my wife's half Irish, so it's often something in the roast beef vein.
I love that.
Yeah. This year,
I never get it, but I love it.
And then because of the Puerto Rican background, my kids always liked when I made the pernil, the Latin pork, because he would make that.
Ah. Rick Orlando's our guest today. Let's take a quick break. We'll get to phones and emails coming up. 800-348-2551 is our number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Holiday recipes, holiday memories with our friend Chef Rick Orlando. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Dude, the hard cheese with the balsamic is amazing.
So I just finished my busy, busy October. I did 4 tours this October.
Oh, over there, over Sicily.
In Italy. Yeah. And it was the longest I've ever done. I'm going back to 3 because... Yeah, it's not that I miss my dog, I miss my wife. It's a long time. I was away for 7 weeks.
Why don't you bring your wife?
She works.
Huh.
She comes. Well, she'll come and meet me here and there, but, you know, she can't take 4 weeks off.
All right.
So we were in Parma, and we went to a Casaficcio, a cheese maker, and they're famous for Parmigiana Reggiano.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought 2 kilos of the 24-month aged, which I like the best. There's older. But the 24-month is nice because when you eat it and it interacts with the chemicals in your mouth, the flavor gets bigger and bigger.
It's amazing cheese. And I always love this kind of hard cheese. By the way, when you say I brought over a couple of kilos, it almost sounds nefarious.
I brought a couple of keys back.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, from Parma. And I brought from Modena a 10-year-old balsamic vinegar. Which is not actually, it's not vinegar, 10-year-old balsamic. Balsamic vinegar that we have is about 5% of this and 95% of red wine vinegar. This is real balsamic. It has to be aged for a minimum of 8 years, and every year there are 8 barrels, and they get smaller and smaller, and it's like a Solera system. So every year they put Lambrusco wine, which is like sweet red wine,
yeah.
And then at the end of the year they take about 20% of that and put it in the next barrel. Every year they move it down. Till the end, the barrel's only this big. It's only like maybe about 5-10 liters, where they start out with a 40-liter barrel. And every barrel has to be made out of a different wood. There's hickory, there's oak, there's chestnut, there's maple, to be a DOP or DOP, domain of origin, protected, real balsamic from Modena.
Now, do you think, now I know when you're making bourbon, you have to have, you know, oak mm-hmm. barrels. Do you think the different wood really makes a vast difference?
I think that I'm sure it does because, well, you know, Italy just got awarded the UNESCO Award for heritage of food. Italian food just won a UNESCO, it's protected. And a lot of it is because of this psychosis that they have. It has to be this away, and you only make it this away, and you get the DOP, and you charge 6 times or more.
Okay.
But,
yeah,
yes.
It's probably not cheap for that bottle.
This is about 25 euros here, okay. Probably about 35
that's
or 40.
That's not a big bottle for that.
No, but, you know, and we make something here because America's really come up with really good ways of making something half as good, much cheaper, but similar, and it's called balsamic syrup. But most of the balsamic syrup you have is balsamic vinegar, sugar, guar gum, thickeners and stuff. This is natural. This
the real
is like
thing.
The real thing, yeah.
Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. 800-348-2551. Before we hit the phones here again, this email came in from Andrew. I grew up on that crab sauce, too. My family doesn't want to eat it when I make it for them now. For Christmas Eve, my grandma's family would make red clam sauce mm-hmm. with raisins and pignoles.
Oh, she's Sicilian.
People often balk at that when I mention it. There's nothing like the memories of smelling that when we arrived to celebrate Christmas Eve.
You know, thank you for that email. I've had numerous conversations with people about how their kids won't eat the food that they grew up on. And I said, you know, we made it a thing. From the time my kids were babies, we made it a thing. First, we would go down to Connecticut to visit the family, but as the kids got bigger, we stayed home. We invited friends over. We made Christmas Eve a thing. Did they eat every single dish? Some of them did. My daughter was maybe a little squeamish about the scongili, but
yeah.
In general, they were exposed to it all, and now they've all carried on the tradition in their own way, but they're certainly not, I only eat fried shrimp. You know, they want to... They're much more daring because it was part of their life. And it's, again, to me, a lot of culinary tradition is not that different from like religious tradition. How many people say, oh, I'm Catholic, and they go to church on Easter and Christmas
right.
Eve? You know, it's like
yeah.
the holidays are the time to celebrate your traditions, no matter what your ethnic background is, no matter what your belief system is. It's like it's still tradition, and tradition is really good to teach your kids, I think.
So why don't we add philosopher on your bio for the
next
time? You know what? You know, call my producer.
Where's the armchair?
800-348-2551. It's Chef Rick Orlando, and let's go to the phone lines. We'll go to Catherine in Averill Park. Catherine, you're on.
Hello.
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 Hi, I'm so thrilled to get to talk to you.
Oh, thank you.
You have no idea.
I do now.
Many years ago at New World, I had an appetizer that was billed on the menu as Vietnamese street food.
The calamari?
Do you remember what it was? Because I don't remember what it was called, and I've never seen it since.
I think it was called Vietnamese street-style calamari. Was that right? Was it fried calamari?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it was a fried calamari maybe. That was just dusted in rice flour, fried really quickly in peanut oil, and hit with salt and black pepper, and served with like a little tamarind peanut sauce and cucumbers.
Yes,
yeah, that
yes,
was my
yes, yes,
that
yes.
was my signature calamari. Yeah, Vietnamese street style calamari.
Oh my God, it was absolutely one of the three best things I've ever had in my life.
Someday you can tell me the other two.
it could change at any given moment, but
good.
It's always on my top three.
All right.
Thank you. Calamari. Wow. Absolutely fantastic. I'm so grateful to get to talk to you. By the way, my Christmas thing is goose.
I love goose for Christmas, and
I'll take the crab sauce for Christmas Eve anytime.
You know, maybe I'll do goose this year. Goose is an interesting meat because it's gotten really expensive.
Yeah.
cost over $100 for a goose.
Right.
And if you don't know how to cook it, it can be dry and not. But done properly, goose is like a cross between duck and roast beef.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. But yeah. You have to, you know, we would buy them for the restaurant every year, and we would break them down, and we would have to do the pieces of boneless breasts, because the breast is almost like flank steak. You know, it's red.
You're kidding
me. You cook
it
medium rare, crisp the skin up. The legs are like giant duck legs. And then we'd make stock, and we'd make dumplings, but we would make cassoulet, which is a big winter dish in France, from the goose fat. And we took goose neck to make the broth and the goose confit. But it was a lot of work. It was, for me, it was an entire day of just processing goose into ways to make it work. But if you roast a whole goose, you know, the breast, it's very lean, and it's difficult to do. I usually do the leg separately and the breast, but I might do one.
Catherine, thanks for the call, and happy holidays to you. Now, wait, you're doing poultry. Goose is technically poultry, right?
Medium? Christmas Day.
Medium?
Like medium rare.
How do you do that?
You do, I mean, duck, too.
Doesn't that violate some... Won't the FDA be knocking on your door?
No, I don't think ducks and geese duck breast is always served medium rare, rosy, you know, medium rare to medium in restaurants, because as long as it hits about 135 degrees, it's fine.
I don't know if I ever had goose. Our family was fairly pedestrian. Nothing fancy.
Well, you know, there's geese everywhere. Great story. I used to live in Flushing, Queens.
Right.
And I was working in the East Village, and I had to walk through the Botanical Gardens to get to my place on 134th Street and Booth Memorial Avenue, right near the World's Fair Unisphere.
Right.
And I'm walking across one night, maybe 1:32 in the morning, and there's a big man-made pond at the Botanical Gardens. And in the distance, I see this person lumbering, kind of thinking, oh, my God, this is Quasimodo. And I got a little nervous. I put a rock in my pocket. I'm walking slowly. And as the person approached me, it walked by me, and it was a little woman. And over her shoulder, she had trussed up probably a dozen ducks and geese that she had snagged out of the pond that night.
Okay, you know, I got to be honest with you. I have my own story about this from when I worked in Westchester. I don't want to name names, but there was a restaurant that got busted for, and this is 35 years ago now, so it's fine, grabbing ducks out of the pond.
All right, so you want free range?
That's
or factory farms. Well, I mean, come on.
All right, this email from our buddy John. My family Christmas dinner used to be top sirloin roast beef, green beans, mushroom souffle, and potatoes. Mm. It was a potatoes Byron. It was for about 20 aunts, uncles, and cousins. That's too many people. That's way too many people.
It could be fun.
Now, John says, we're down to dinners of three or six, and my family's tired of roast beef, so now I'm making braised Iberico pork collar with dried porcini and
Iberico,
and various accompaniments. It's better for leftovers. And some adjective that I won't say, delicious.
Ah, it's
begins farging. With an F.
F-A-R-G-I-N-G.
Something
yes.
like that, yes. Yeah. Well, thank you, John, for that, and I almost did read it. 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando's our guest. What would a Rick Orlando appearance be without a call from Joan in Schenectady?
And I get to wish you happy holidays, Joan.
Happy holidays to both of you. Thank
happy
you
holidays.
so much.
Happy
I
holidays.
Had a phone issue. Nice singing. I had a phone issue last month you were on, and you don't know how many times I picked up the phone and said no.
Was he on last month? No. Okay. So anyway, what's happening,
it was
Joan?
Recently.
Time flies.
It does. It truly does. Well, first, couple compliments, Ray. Thanks for the extra duty on the news and the great bumper music.
Well,
and
thank you.
We are so ready to welcome back Lucas.
Oh,
and y'all have done such an incredible job, all of y'all.
Thank you. And Lucas is back Monday, so it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I was listening to the news. I heard you.
Okay.
Other quick one was my particular favorite was the creamed onion dish, pearled onions that my mom made.
Yeah.
And we had a large family, and I was one of the few that really liked it. So I really liked it.
I remember that too, Joan. And that goes back to my grandmother. And yes, I liked it too.
Very
even
Irish.
As a little kid.
Very Irish thing.
It's very Irish. We're Irish both sides. Mm. And so we get a lot of really delicious, butter-rich dishes.
Oh.
All right. So let's see. I could ask about my cherry tomatoes.
Right.
But I think I'm going to go to this one, it was the gardener's fault. They taught me how to keep cherry tomatoes ripening indoors.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So my kitchen kind of looks like a inadvertent Christmas decoration with all the little tiny red bulbs. But I need more help than that. I was gifted with a large batch of frozen, I think, tuna steaks.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were a vegetarian.
And I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
How can I cook one or two of them and offer? I mean, I can offer them to other people, but I'm brave. How do I? And I believe they're tuna. They're creamy white with little red edges on the curvy part.
On the curvy part, you know, tuna's not really white. It's pretty red. Maybe it's swordfish.
No, so
maybe,
it's not tuna.
Maybe it's swordfish.
Swordfish. Okay.
Swordfish. Swordfish is easy
on the grill.
On the grill or in a big skillet, if you want to keep it simple, the most simple dish is just sear it on both sides, add a little knob of butter, a big squeeze of lemon, a few capers and some parsley, and swirl it around in the pan until it's just cooked through, and you'll have the simplest and easiest dish, and it represents how delicious swordfish is without burying the flavor.
Huh.
I love
lemon,
it.
Lemon,
thank
capers,
you.
Parsley is a no-brainer for a big steaky fish.
So you're doing your vegetarian thing for holiday cooking. What are you doing this time, Joan?
Oh, my holiday cooking for Christmas. I usually make some kind of a roasted vegetable casserole-y dish.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I want to eat, nobody else eats it. So with all the meat on the table, I'm still full.
Aha.
One of my favorite ways to do that is actually to do Swiss chard gratin, which is...
Gratin? Okay.
Yeah. Right? You cut it up with the stems, put the stems in the water first in salted water, let them cook for about 5 minutes. I cut the stems about a half an inch long, and then the greens, squeeze it out, put it in a casserole dish with some cream, some parmigiana, some breadcrumbs on top, and bake it till it's bubbling. And it's so delicious, and everybody loves it because they love... cream and cheese and breadcrumbs. It couldn't be anything in there, but, you know,
nice. Joan, we got to move on here, friend, but we'll talk to you soon. Yeah?
Thank you, Joan. Good hearing from you, darling.
See
you.
Support. No, not, I'm not doing underwriting now. Let's go to our next line. We'll go to Ulster Park and Dolores. Nope, this is not Dolores. It's Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hello,
in North Adams.
Hello. Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just my question for the chef is, I have a lady friend in Belgium, and I've visited her several times over the years. We used to live together stateside. A couple of times I've tried to bring back some cheese and processed meat that are factory sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And they were seized it by customs.
Yeah, I've never had
never had
a problem with cheese, but meat is a no-no. Yes.
Yeah, they can do whatever they want. I think they just eat really well. Because because the cheese was still in its wax. Everything was right from the factory, but they took my processed meats. And some wonderful cheeses.
Rats. Were the cheeses cryovac'd? Were the cheeses cryovac'd?
No, they were still in their wax. They were heavily waxed.
So what I found with cheese, I just brought this parmigiana back.
The processed meat. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just brought this cheese back from Italy a couple of weeks ago. Is if the cheese is cryovac'd, they don't bother you. But if it's not, they're not happy about it. Yeah, they'll take it away.
And cryovac would be a second sealing,
A vacuum seal in plastic and vacuum seal in plastic. Yeah, vacuum sealed.
Right, and that the processed meat was processed like that.
Yeah, you can't bring processed meats over here for some reason.
Huh?
Yeah, they don't like it.
Jim, thanks a lot and good luck. 800-348-2551 is the number. Anne writes in. A Christmas food tradition that came to a screeching halt. Pierogies are the main event for my husband's Polish family Christmas meal. When it became too much for his mom to do, we stepped in to help, learn the ropes. We refined the process every year, and it became like a well-oiled machine. Then I got diagnosed with celiac disease. No gluten. We tried making gluten-free pierogies that following Christmas. That was the last year we did the family Christmas meal. They were horrible, unruly to make. messy to boil, most exploded, and for those that survived to the table, it was like cabbage wrapped in spongy cardboard. I know Chef Rick's wife has gluten issues, too. Any chance he might be able to direct us to a tasty pierogi dough recipe? And happy holidays to our favorite chef and favorite radio host. Well, Ann, thank you, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you. And so here's the deal. Gluten-free pasta to make, like, dried macaroni with rice and corn, you know, works. Soft doughs for stuffing. I'm sure people have recipes, and they'll probably call in. I've never had great luck. There are some companies that make gluten-free pierogi that are pretty good.
Yeah.
But the one time we did buy them, we bought them at the co-op or health food store, we boiled them, heated butter in a nonstick skillet, which we don't use a lot. I keep it just for, like, flipping eggs. But we cooked them in there and just swirled them around gently. We couldn't really push the cooking on them because they would stick and break apart. There are some things that, you know, it's a difference between being gluten-free and celiac, right? Only 0.5%, 0.05% of the population is celiac. A lot of people eat gluten-free. We can talk about that later. But pierogi's a tricky one. Maybe you should make it, try to find a good one online. Look at some
pre-made reviews.
Yeah. Pre-made ones, because I've never had success with it either. Even ravioli, I've never had success with.
Mary writes in, our ancestors were Scottish fishermen, one of whom was lost in 1864 during a particularly stormy winter. To commemorate, we placed fried oysters, egg, saltine dust, and butter in the stuffing, and every Christmas morning we'd have fried oysters along with scrambled eggs, followed by raspberries to cleanse the palate.
All sounds good, except I don't think raspberries in December would be quite traditional, although you can use frozen ones in Scotland. But yeah, I love oysters for breakfast. If you're going to eat eggs, why not eat oysters?
Protein. Never had that.
Really?
No.
I take people into the Catania Fish Market around 9 in the morning in Sicily, and the first thing I do is take them to the oyster guy, and we have raw oysters for breakfast. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, in my house, I'm pushing for this, and I don't know. I usually get overruled, but I want a good old-fashioned American Christmas, and I want to fire the charcoal grill up and do steaks.
So what's American?
No,
I'm going to start you on that,
kidding.
Right?
I'm kidding. I know. I mean, you know, it's just...
No, it's good to cook some big steak. Cook a really big, thick steak
and
carve it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Holiday menus, holiday recipes, holiday memories with Chef Rick Orlando. We'll be back. Is the number. It's holiday cooking, holiday menus, holiday memories with Chef Rick Orlando today. And the crab sauce is crazy good. It's much mellower than I thought it would
be. It's just the sweetness of crab. It's like redolent in this whole studio. Smells like shellfish right now.
Now, I think James Polyoligopoulos is doing the 3:30 news, so I hope he's not allergic to shellfish. That's all.
Well, I don't
say.
Think there's any solids in the air right now. So I just keep slurping it down. Ready.
So
get
good,
it.
Man.
And
so
that's
good.
That really great linguine that I bring in from Sicily. It's really awesome.
You know what? So this is something that you're involved in, the linguine. This has got a real body to it.
You know, my wife has been gluten-free for 25 years.
We were
in Italy, she would eat a little bit here and a little bit there and say, I'm not really having a reaction. Then we met these people in Sicily that make ancient grain pasta.
Yeah.
And this tests 0.0% toxins. You should try it. We eat it 3 times a week.
What do you mean
now.
Toxins?
Most of our wheat has got a lot of toxins in it because it's grown in the Dakotas where it's very moist. So they have to, there's all these funguses that develop on it. So they use fungicide, they use Roundup, they use a lot of things to kind of kill the funguses. Where in Sicily, it rains in the spring, and then it's almost like Mexico where they grow. It's very arid in the summer.
Yeah.
And they don't have to use any type of fungicides or sprays, so it tests completely clean. And I've got testimonials on my website, person
Amazing.
After person said, I can eat pasta again.
Ancient grains is something of a misnomer, though, right?
Well, okay, it's marketed. In America, we take everything and turn it into a way to make money.
Right.
These grains, this is Persia Taki wheat.
Yep.
They came from Persia to Sicily about 2,500 years ago.
That's not ancient.
And they're grown the same way.
All right, I guess it is ancient.
Well, yeah, grown the same way. Lower gluten, lower glycemic, and again, people eat it, and they're enjoying it.
I'm digging this sauce so much. So I'm definitely, I cannot see my house ever boiling six crabs for 6 hours
or
whatever.
Just let it sit in the back of the stove while you do other things. Plup, plup.
Can you ever, is it available? You don't give me any brand names, but does anybody make this stuff in jars?
Not that I know of.
Oof, maybe yeah. Chef Rick Orlando ought to try.
Imagine that.
All right, let's see. Let's go to Dolores now in Ulster Park. Dolores, you're on.
Hello, Dolores.
Hello. Talking about old, traditional recipes. My family's from Puerto Rico.
Oh.
And one of the things that we eat every year, and it's harder for me to find living upstate, is pasteles de plátano.
Ah, see, you can get pasteles around. I think that, what's the name of the guy? There's a hot table in Kingston, Angels. He makes them occasionally. Hot table's like a restaurant. There's one right over here, the Latin place, where they have, it's almost like steam table, but it's not a buffet. You point and they fill your...
Oh, I see.
But I know Angels in Kingston has pasteles often. They're a pain to make.
Right.
They're a pain to make. But I know...
It's three pages of food.
Yeah.
It's a recipe.
Yeah. And you have to get the green bananas when they're green and hard, not even close to ripening. The yuca, the plátanos. Yeah, it's a lot of grating and stuff. But pasteles are great, and they're cute because they're holiday. They're like tamales in a way. They're bundled up and they're tied with a little string, so they look like a little gift. I love
right.
that.
Right, my mother would wrap it up in the the leaf of the plátano.
Yeah,
and of course the thing that I can make every year, and I usually have to find pasteles, is pernil.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was telling Ray. We would make that on Sunday. The pernil. Pernil was the proper way to say it, but pernil.
Okay.
The skin on roast pork shoulder was stuffed with garlic. Yeah, we make it pretty much. It's a Christmas tradition at my house, too. As a matter of fact, I brought Ray a dish we used to make with my stepfather, which is like arroz con mariscos, but it's actually rice and gandules and olives, but it has lobster and all this other stuff all cooked together.
I'll make a little room here. You can lay a little on me there.
There you go. Lay a little oven on me.
Dolores, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Dolores.
And Merry Christmas. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our number. Chef Rick Orlando.
Hi.
Share some holiday recipes. Not too much, man.
Yeah.
Holiday recipes, memories, etc. And now let's go to Leverett, Massachusetts, and it's Nick's turn. Nick, you're on.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, how you doing? I'm loving listening to you.
Thank you.
Brings back a lot of memory. Love. I've been in food service for 45 years. Anyway, I grew up suburban Long Island. My mother only had, I only knew flounder and sole and scallops. But when I got married and moved to New Haven, where you were, around 1980, I managed a place called Smith Brothers Fish
down
on the docks near the Chart House restaurant. And we would take fish off the boat. And I learned how to cut everything. But a couple of things I just wanted to tell you, because I was listening to you about your crab sauce, is I never knew about what Italian mamas wanted at Christmas and the seven fishes. And these guys, these draggers, were bringing in soft shell lobsters.
Yeah.
Which we were not allowed legally to take. You're only allowed to buy hard shell.
Mm-hmm.
But the old Italian mamas would line up at the door, and we'd buy them off the boat for like $1 a pound and sell them to them for like $2 a pound, so they could make sauce.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was the deal, and I never had any experience with that. The other thing I just wanted to quick, two other things. I never knew about eels.
Ah, eels are big.
And we would buy boxes of live eels, and I learned how to like score them around the neck and pull the skin off. And, it was a great education. But the last thing I wanted to tell you is when I worked for a friend of mine opening a seafood place, we made gourmet seafood sauces and soups. I came up with a great recipe for gumbo, but we put a half a blue crab in every quart jar of gumbo, because as you said, after they eat the whole gumbo, then you could spend a half an hour, sucking on the meat of the blue crab.
There are a couple of places, once you get up out of New Orleans into the bayou, like in Lafayette and that area, where they do the blue crab gumbo a lot, and they just cook the crabs. And you got to be careful; you might catch a little crunchy piece in it. But
yeah,
you sit and suck on the crabs after. Yeah,
and Nick, I mean, Rick's gumbo has alligator in it, so I mean that is the real thing, man. Hey, thanks for the call, Rick. What's the name of this seafood thing?
Rice with seafood, arroz con mariscos.
The scallop, I mean, the whole thing is amazing, and it's got a little spice,
yeah.
But that scallop is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
It is a scallop, right?
Yeah, it was a scallop.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just not sure. I'm not a foodie. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Chef Rick Orlando. Let's go to Peter, who is in High Falls, New York. Peter, you're on.
Hi, Peter.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for taking my call. Hello, Chef. Pleasure to speak with you. Yeah, my holiday childhood memory is I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, and my mom was from Edinburgh, Scotland. So, you know, my childhood was really, I was raised by basically like 50 or 60 Scottish people, you know, in Greenwich. They were from Edinburgh and Glasgow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they would all go out and have a great time on New Year's Eve. But on New Year's Day, my mom would host a New Year's Day party for those 40 or 50 Scottish people, and she would make beef Wellington.
Mm.
So, you know, I've tried my best to make it. I made it a couple of times, and, you know, it was a very exciting dish to make, and it was unbelievably, you know, very tasty, magical, really. But, you know, now we're vegetarian, so you may have some tips or some suggestions on the vegetarian side or just overall tips on how to cook beef Wellington. But I wish you guys were at the New Year's Day parties. The Scottish people have a tradition where, you know, they don't shy away from a party in general, but you know, everybody had to sing their own. Everybody had to sing their own song on.
Oh, I love that!
On New Year's Day,
yeah,
it was outstanding.
And
just
belly up to the Wellington. Listen, before you go, we made at our restaurant a really popular vegetarian dish, which we called Mushroom Wellington.
Really?
And so we would make a duxelle, a mushroom, ground up mushroom that you would normally put around the meat on a beef Wellington. But instead of the beef, we would take big portobello mushrooms, put a little oil, salt, and pepper, and roast them in the oven first, and layer the portobello mushrooms in. And if they wasn't vegan, I'd make a little herbed goat cheese and put it between there, and then wrap the whole thing up in puff pastry. And the mushroom Wellington is delicious. And if you buy a small container of dry porcini mushrooms, the intensity of flavor of the dry porcinis is great. So we would make like a mushroom cream sauce, a little shallot, a little mustard, a little wine, the dried mustard's cream, let it reduce, and drizzle the mustard cream sauce over the mushroom Wellington, and it's a very festive dish and vegetarian.
What do you think, Peter?
Send me the recipe, please.
Is it on your website, Rick?
No, but I walked you through it.
Okay, fair enough. Peter, thanks for the call. Happy holidays to you. Alice writes in, Yorkshire pudding.
Ah, Yorkies.
Never had luck making this, but any advice would be appreciated.
Don't make them.
Oh, really?
No, my brother-in-law, Chris, is from England, and every year he likes to make the Yorkies. And if we make 24 Yorkies, maybe four or five of them actually puff up
really?
And are good.
Yeah. Now, you know, the CEO's from England, and she hates it when I do an English accent. So she might be upset with you. I don't know. Maybe.
That's all right.
How do you make haggis? No, don't. No, I don't want to know. Susanna from Bern says, my daughter's gluten intolerant. When I'm baking for her, I use flour that I buy at the Polish deli in Latham. Whatever it is about European flour, she's fine with that. Different story for people with celiac. I wouldn't recommend it for them. Happy holidays. And that's from Susanna.
And exactly on that, if you go to rickorlando.com, then you go in the drop-down menu, you see a little thing about Sicilian grains. And I did a whole research project on why certain grains from certain parts of Europe that do not import American grains or do not allow glyphosate Roundup, Americans who are gluten-free, not celiac,
right.
Like my wife, like the pasta I sell, I would say probably half the people that buy my pasta have been gluten-free for years.
And, no way.
They're giving five-star reviews saying, I can eat pasta.
Because,
you know, gluten-free pasta is okay. It's not very nutritious, first of all. It's just pure starch, but it's not the same when you have, like, this linguine was awesome.
Love
right?
The linguine, yeah.
Yeah.
So Betty in Western Mass writes in, I think Rick gave a recipe for eggplant carbonata. Thank you. I'm still enjoying my eggplant harvest with this recipe. Thanks for a wonderful show. What is that recipe?
The carbonata. I brought it last time. The sweet and sour eggplant with the raisins and the pine nuts, and you had it on bread. I think I brought it last
show. Oh, I love that.
Show, yeah.
Speaking of that, are there raisins in this dish What are these?
In the rice dish?
Yeah.
No, those are pigeon peas.
What's a pigeon pea?
It's a type of...
Like, dude, that's not a raisin?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Looks like a raisin.
I'm going to have to do a little analysis here.
You don't have a rabbit, do you?
No, it's, you know what it is? It's a little crispy rice from the bottom.
I love that. That was my favorite part so far.
Sakarat.
The number is 800-348-2551. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. We'll go to Adams, Massachusetts once again. Jim, you're on.
Hi, Jim.
Yay, Ray. Yay, Rick.
Hello. Hi.
Yes, favorite childhood memory of Christmas breakfast was... it's stuffing my mother used to make, dressing used to make to put in the turkey. Then I met my wife and went to her house for Thanksgiving dinner in 1964 for the first time. And I met up with my father-in-law's chestnut dressing.
Mm.
There's no bread in it. It's a couple of pounds of whatever kind of meat you want, whether some nice sweet sausage or some ground turkey, whatever, and plenty of... celery and onions, and then the chestnuts.
Yeah, too. I love that.
And his secret spicing, he would never let anyone see how he was flavoring his dressing when he was making it over the years. Till in later years, he let my wife help him, especially peeling all those chestnuts. And his secret spice mix was Bell's seasoning.
Ah, Bell's. Well, that's heavy on the sage. I was going to say sage.
Little yellow box with a black... and blue turkey on the front. Yeah,
yeah, you don't see that. You don't see that. It's not as everywhere like it used to be. But
oh,
it's heavy on the sage.
Sometimes finds it out in Tennessee even.
Yeah, a little sage, a little
but that
celery
was great
seed
on toast in the morning.
Good. All
right. Toast yourself up some nice bread and put that chestnut dressing on there.
Beautiful.
Sounds good to me,
Jim. Thanks for the call.
Happy holidays, brother.
This email from Kevin, our mutual friend Kevin. I have read years ago that our olfactory memories are our strongest memories. I remember when I was maybe six being dropped off in front of my paternal grandmother's apartment building in Yonkers. As I walked through the first floor lobby, the Italian neighbors would be cooking their red sauce. Oh, I could not inhale enough. There were Portuguese families on the second floor. Whatever they were cooking, that delicious aroma is still in my brain. Graham, a widowed Irish immigrant, lived on the third floor. She'd be roasting mutton. It must have died of natural causes. The entire third floor smelled like animal crematorium. I was a good boy, but the only way I could choke it down was with a half gallon of milk. I'll give his last name, but you know him.
I know who it is, Kevin. Mutton and milk, huh? Happy holidays to you, brother.
Truly disgusting, my friend. Thank you for that. Our number, we only have a couple of minutes left, a minute and a half left with Rick Orlando. If you want to jump in, 800-348-2551.
This went too quickly today.
Good times, huh?
Time, yeah.
So what's in store for 26 for you? This will be the last show we do until sometime, I don't know, March or something like that.
Well, let's see. I'm getting a couple of partial knee replacements. One
again?
Next week.
I thought
no,
you had
I
that
I didn't
already.
Do it yet. No, I didn't do it yet. You know, I'm planning. I still have a couple spaces left for spring in Sicily. And then,
oh, how do people find out about that, by the way?
If you go to rickorlando.com or you listen to the underwriting on the Vox Pop, you'll hear me.
Whoops. Yes.
But, it's at Rick Orlando, no K in Rick, rickorlando.com. It's there. We have a bunch of stuff scheduled for fall. I'm planning on going out to Seattle soon. My daughter moved to Seattle.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm going to explore
Is
the
she
food.
A grunger?
No, she's a creative... She's a creative in the tech world.
Do they still do the grunge rock over there in Seattle?
I'm sure there's still rock and roll everywhere.
Well, it's rock and roll.
Flannel shirt, ripped jeans, and a loud guitar. I mean, you know, you're in.
It's
you're
upstate New York in the
70s. Forever, right.
That's where we're way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, everything else, you know, what else is going on? I've got four pallets of pasta. I'm waiting on, my friend just made olive oil about a month ago. I'm waiting on fresh olive oil to come in.
All right, I have a question for you before we go. We only have 30 seconds. When is Rick Orlando opening a restaurant again? You know you have the burning desire somewhere in there.
I don't think so.
Really?
No. I'm happy doing consulting with other people because I get to pretend I own a restaurant for a couple of months and doing little pop-ups. The world has changed, and what I did was lightning in a bottle. I was young. I was crazy. We did a lot of fun stuff. The restaurants are legendary. I don't want to ruin my legacy.
Be honest. You're making more money now, right? Is that the bottom line?
I'm doing all right.
Okay.
I'm doing all right.
Hey, Rick, Merry Christmas, man. Great having
Merry
you
Christmas,
on the show.
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah and happy holidays. And, you know, wish anybody whatever you want. Just wish them well.
Exactly. And we will see you in 26. Support comes from the Hungry Chicken, an old-fashioned country store, breakfast sandwiches, pies, pastries, organic cider and apples, and a plethora of local crafts. Route 5S, Schenectady, across from Kiwanis Park. HungryChickenFarmMarket.com. Cafe Capriccio announcing their guided tours in Tuscany for 2026 with wine, cuisine, culture, visiting Florence, Siena, and Cortona. RuaTours.com for details. At Krause's Homemade Candy, Central Avenue, Albany, with specialties like old-fashioned peanut brittle, chocolate fudge, buttercrunch, toffee, gift boxes at novelties, Krause'sCandy.com. Well, that's it for the show today. Thanks again to Chef Rick Orlando for being with us. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for the calls and the memories and the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, the engineer to the stars. Andrea Leong screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be back on Monday for a Medical Monday. Meantime, have a splendid weekend.